sit at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Citizens.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall. And I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Culture.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter of Dana.
Solid.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, joined by my co-host Gord Barnes, with special guests Kim Sutherland and Chad Miller. Today, we're going to talk about Street Culture, a group whose purpose is to support homeless teens. Welcome, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Now, did I get that right? I wrote this before we had the big conversation here in the green room, and wow, you guys are doing so much.
Did you see me lift my eyebrows when you said our purpose is homeless teens? It certainly is part of what we do,
right.
But that and so much more.
Yeah, that's what happened. I saw the eyebrows go up, so I thought, I guess I'm missing the mark.
We've never quite been introduced that way, I can tell you.
So welcome, Chad and Kim. It's been a long time since we've had a chat about what's happening at Street Culture. We've known each other, Kim, for a long, long time, and I've always admired the work you've done, and it's good to meet you, Chad, for the first time.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us.
So, you know, I was saying earlier that probably one of the things that Street Culture Kids is most famous for in the community, and many people will know Street Culture for is face painting. You're out at events. For a long time, over the years, you've been doing this, and I wasn't sure really what the current status of that is, and maybe it would be a good place to start in terms of giving people who are listening to the program today a little bit of background on why you did that to start with and whether you're doing it now and some of the logic behind that. So, Kim or Chad, if you'd like to start with that.
Thanks, Doug. You know, I couldn't be prouder than to be here with one of our best, as we call them, our finishers, and that's Chad. He certainly has the gift of art, and not just with the medium of paint, but with his own business now as a DJ as well. But when we look back over the almost 18 years of our agency, art has always been intertwined into everything we do. And there's so many reasons for it, but primarily it's accessible to everyone. There's no fight for first place. There's no best winners. It can be a collective opportunity. It can be learning. It can be teaching. It can be community. It can be one-on-one. And it's just served us very well as a tool. And that's what we look at everything we do as a tool toward the purpose of connecting with young people, using these tools of non-threatening activities, building trust, and then ultimately creating tax-paying citizens in our community. That's our number one goal. Of course, that takes a long time, and watching you certainly over the last 18 years, Gord, you've seen our kids grow up, and very unique in our organization is our kids have now become our staff.
And speaking of growing up, I will just say one thing. When I met street culture, it was through face painting. One of my friends one of my friends was a good face painter, and I used to hang out in Vic Park, and I'll get into more of that later, and you'll see the connection, how that goes on as we talk more later in the program. But street culture used to be located right across from Vic Park, and my friend had told me that she learned to face paint from street culture. So I walked into street culture one day, and I said, "Do you have to be an awesome face painter to get a job here?" And at that moment, that's when I got connected with Kim. Him not knowing that I was a street kid and struggling at that time, he brought me into his office. I told him my story, and I've been with them ever since. And
wow.
So it had to do with face painting where I joined street culture.
One of the things that's always struck me, Chad, about the street culture kids and your face painting, and whenever you do that at a community event, is the people, the young people who get there, whether it's really young people, right, or maybe young people your own age who get their face painted, nobody ever looks unhappy at that point.
I've got shivers right now thinking about the positive attitudes from the people after they get their faces painted. It's the most rewarding feeling to see a child with the most biggest smile on their face after seeing their face painted. Yeah, it's a great thing.
So what is it about that, you know, have you thought about what is it about face painting and for, you know, and I'm thinking particularly for young people, you know, who are maybe in the ages of 5 or 6, why is that so exciting for them?
I'm going to share a story to illustrate this. A bit of an extreme example, okay. But many years ago, probably 14 or 15 years ago, a little girl came up to me while I was in a face painting line, and I asked her, "What would you like to be, sweetie?" And she said she wanted to be a fairy princess, and one of our specialties. So I made the most beautiful fairy princess. Her father walked up minutes later, and much to my surprise, and everyone in the line leaned down and yelled, and I'll change the child's name, "Joey, what the hell are you doing?" And here I had painted a little boy as a little girl. Now, what I couldn't know is that child was transgendered at that age. Years later, the family approached me, and they remembered that day and heard about our work. And to take a long story and make it short, we ended up doing a fundraiser and helped the girl go through the process of becoming totally transgendered, and to this day she's now a happy university student and well adjusted. And it was that initial contact, I think, that she sensed the safety in what she was doing. I had no idea that it wasn't a little girl I was painting, and extraordinary. I'll never forget the moment when that happened, and then the follow-up with the family later.
Wow Good story, Kim. So you're doing this still, the street painting or face painting, sorry. And how regularly do you do that during the year?
We're out 20 to 40 times a month. And
really?
Pretty much every weekend. There's 4 or 5 functions on the go. In fact, right now we're at the university, hi to the folks out there, with the international students. They're having a fair for international students today. So there's a team out helping them celebrate.
So you'd kind of use this as a bit of a fundraiser as well?
Yes, it's a primary source of income. It helps us with the extras that aren't line items and budgets. We are not core funded. We write contracts every year and apply through granting sources. And the face art, all of our fundraising, the face painting, the catering, the public speaking, all of that income allows us to direct the money where it goes best, not necessarily where we predestined it through our budget each year. So it's a critical part of who we are financially, but it also has incredible spin-off opportunities for learning for kids. There are really countless opportunities, learning everything from budgeting to preparing to go into a public outing, to greet the public, the actual expression of the art, but the setup, the teardown, the interacting with parents, all of these are critical skills that young people can learn, and they're transferable into the workforce.
Cool. So, you know, awesome.
there may as well be people. I mean, I mentioned earlier that the face painting is what you're best known for, but I'm sure as you've evolved over the years from the early days many years ago, there have been some pretty significant changes that I'm not current with. And maybe you'd like to start, Kim, by just sharing a little bit of the history of Street Culture Kids and maybe a bit of an update about where you are now.
Well, I'd first like to invite people to mark their calendars for September of 2015. We're going to do something unprecedented, and it's going to be called Street Culture Kids Come Home. And we're calling back all of the young people who were with us pre-2005, so they'll now be contributing members of the community, and we're going to do short vignettes through video, and then interplay the videos with some live music of the kids, some short, a stage show, but with a comedy, with some very serious moments, and we're hoping to book the casino and have our 18th birthday party and the show at the same time. So that will be the culmination of our work for 18 years. But it was several years ago, about 10 years ago, when we first embarked into the housing part of our agency, and we couldn't have preseen what need and what desperate need there would be on the streets of Regina, as me, like many people, wouldn't understand that every night young people sleep on the street. There's several buildings that have exhaust vents. There's cardboard tents out back in the cold weather to keep them warm. And these are all a hidden population. I don't think they hit the radar for many reasons. And the first and primary would be that they are not seen as contributing members of the community financially through their taxes, nor are they of a voting age that they would hit the radar there. And we're lacking the champion that would step forward and make them a priority, because this problem is not going to go away in one funding cycle or one political cycle. This is an entire generation we have to work with, and our results can only be viewed with the children's children reaching adulthood.
So really, you've evolved quite a bit in terms of the kinds of things you're doing, the programming, you're doing shelter now, and a wide range of things.
Yes, in fact, we have six outreach buildings now. We operate the only emergency shelter for young people in the province, and it works with young people between 16 and 18 years old, although with special ministerial permission, and we have an extraordinary relationship with the Ministry of Social Services, really with all provincial ministries. We can get kids on each side of that age group at times in need. We have the second stage home for young men. We bought the old detox center a couple of years ago on Vic and Retallick. And it also seconds as our administration office. And then we have four homes. Two are for young girls, safe houses for girls between 16 and 18. One for boys. Also, the young men would be what are considered long-term wards. So instead of their service or their connection with Ministry of Social Services ending at 18, they can go right up to 21. And then recently, we opened what is a real gem in our organization, and it's a sober house for males. One of the greatest challenges young men face when they come out of incarceration, generally they're incarcerated for drug and alcohol abuse based issues. They are not criminal people at their base. They are addicted people, or they have mental illness. But instead of working with them proactively, we wait until they break a window or steal a car to somehow, again, connected to drugs or alcohol, and then we provide the resources. The problem is when they come out of incarceration, they go back to the influences that were there before and very quickly relapse into drugs and alcohol. So we've rented a beautiful five-bedroom home in the South End as a pilot project. We started this just about 6 months ago, and it's going extraordinary. It gives young men a new start, a true new start in a safe, sober house where they control the space. It's in a nice neighborhood. They have outside resources, but the common denominator is everyone is sober in that house. Now, it should be spoken that most of the young men there are actively involved in street culture in the day. Some of them are employees. Some of them help out with our fundraising and have extra jobs or are even students themselves. So that's a real gem for us right now as a pilot project. We're watching to see what parts of that we will duplicate in the future.
Wow. So, Chad, one of the things that really caught my attention was an article just recently in the Prairie Dog, and it was about the soup program that you've got, and that's kind of what you're involved in, as I understand it.
Yes, the Street Culture Outreach Project Experience scope is where we hand out soup in Victoria Park. Mm-hmm. We use the soup as a tool to get people to come up and talk to us, really to engage with us, so we can, you know, speak to them and find out, you know, more about them and just build that relationship with these people. I would say that we are dealing primarily with youth age 12 to 15. 12 to 19, sorry, and then 30 and over. So our goal is to, you know, find underlying issues that's going on with these youth, why they're homeless, what resources they need, and see how we can help them. And I think the beauty about our team is our diverse backgrounds. And, you know, we have nurses, we have students with degrees, and then you have people like myself who've been through it and have been to that dark side. And we have ex-gang members and, you know, all these different kinds of people that can relate to all these different backgrounds that we're seeing. And so, yeah, like, there's nothing a kid or anybody could tell me, for that matter, that would make me pass judgment on them, or because I've been through it all. You know, I've stood there with a cardboard sign begging for money to get drugs and alcohol. I've lived at the Salvation Army. I've hung out in Victoria Park. And, you know, so this is all stuff that I've been through. So that helps them feel comfortable and want to come talk to us. And
one of the things Chad did last year that became a best practice, it was quite accidental, was he got the wrong coffee cup sizes for the soup. And he ended up getting these tiny, tiny coffee cups, and it was all that was available. And I thought, oh, this isn't going to work. You can't put much soup in there. And what ended up happening is the kids come up five or six times to the soup stand instead of once. So the frequency of contact was increased tenfold, and the assessment by the nurses to look out for infections or anything that might suggest a medical issue that became more evident. So from these accidental moments, and Chad picked up on that, and now we only get the smallest coffee cup available at the wholesale club.
Wow. That's cool. You know, Jim was noticing how positive the article was relative to the downtown business community, mm-hmm. sort of being receptive to you doing this.
And, yeah, I was wondering, like, because I don't know very much about you folks, I thought, well, how come the business improvement folks are coming to you to ask you to put on this this soup thing?
You know, as Chad mentioned, when we were in the downtown area for 3 years, we were on Cornwall Street between what is the front of the Bay and Victoria Park, right downtown. And after we vacated, we purchased the property on Vic and Retallick, the old detox center. What the downtown business folks noticed was a spike in negative activity between street-involved youth and downtown shoppers.
Because he'd left.
Well, that's what they extrapolated. We don't see ourselves as quite that powerful, but at the same time, we acknowledged that a niche was being identified, and it was very simple for us to fill the niche. So we met with an excellent folks, very forward-thinking folks at the BID, or Business Improvement District,
right.
And that's a combination of the downtown businesses, of course, and the city of Regina. They were all in, supportive of what was then a pilot project, and we worked directly with the Regina Police Service as well. And the result that summer was I got a call from a manager at the city of Regina late in August, and she said in all her years she had never had an incident-free summer. And yet they were not receiving the calls of harassment that they were accustomed to in the evenings. Knowing now that we're targeted with the times as well of the program, it starts at 5, mm-hmm. and it ends whenever the youth disperse, the weather turns that makes them disperse, or 11 o'clock. We never make it to 11 o'clock. Once the kids are sated, they move out of the downtown area and onto whatever activities are in their evening. But we've met our primary purpose of reducing the number of incidents of negative contact between shoppers and kids. But so much more than happens behind the scenes that we're very proud of and continue to be supported by the police, the mm-hmm. Downtown Business Association, and the City of Regina as funders.
Yeah, and we actually maintain relationships with businesses downtown. And just as soon as yesterday, where I've kept in contact with Beer Brothers and, you know, Tramps Music and Books downtown and O'Hanlon's. And, you know, I go in and check with them all every once in a while to see how things are going. And I got some really great positive feedback yesterday about drastic a drastic decrease in behavior, in negative behaviors downtown and stuff. So it's, yeah, it's going really well.
We often say that it is not the absence of a resource that is the problem for our young people in the community, because if you think about it, this is a very low-cost program. The ingredients in the entire program is some staffing, a van to get kids to and from medical help, and some food for a soup. So the cost for the outcome is really an extraordinary solution to what was seen as an overwhelming problem. And all it took was connecting trusting adults to and strong allies to the street-involved youth. As I said, we often identify the problem is not the absence of resources. Mm-hmm. The problem in our community is the conduit between the street youth and the resource. We have enough basketball programs. We have enough basket weaving programs. And I'm talking under the blanket of all of these activities. Mm-hmm. What we don't have is the allies that will step up and get the kids to the resource they needed. If I had a dollar for every time a young man came to me with a medical issue that simply required seeing a trusted doctor, I'd be a very wealthy man. And all it takes is a quick trip to a medi-center mm-hmm. to help a young person with an infection get right. medical help. It seems so simple, but for some reason the strategies seem elusive on the grand scale of community development. But we're chipping mm-hmm. away at it.
So you're able to make the initial contact just because of the soup program.
Yes, as Chad started by saying, it's about building trust. The mm-hmm. moment that trust is built, we can move mountains. But we don't have is desks between us or files or a deficit-based relationship or a top-down power relationship. It's simply one human extending support to another.
If I could also just mention, that trust has become so strong that I've been approached by a female youth about a rape incident, and she trusted in me to take her to the hospital. It was me that she came and talked to that and asked if I could take her to the hospital. And I sat with her in the hospital room for a couple hours until her family could be with her. And she's still there to this day. She ended up having a baby, and street culture helped her out with clothing and, you know, things for the baby. And, you know, that's just what we do. That's and that all started from soup.
Wow.
And sadly, I'd like to say that that's the exception, but really, this is the rule. These stories could go on and on of mm-hmm. simply people in need and that need being filled by trusting adult allies.
So, you know, Chad, I'm really glad you shared that little story just now and the example, because one of the things that, and Kim, you were kind of referencing this as well, is there are resources in the community. I mean, there's a hospital, you know, not far away from Victoria Park and all that stuff, but finding your way there must not always happen, I guess.
Absolutely. If you can just think about that for a moment and how that must be for a youth that they won't even ask their own family, that yeah. they've just met somebody in the park that's opened up their hands and their heart to them and trusted in them to, you know, deal with the situation with them, help them deal with it. And it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I totally understand it.
So how do places like hospitals and other organizations change to make themselves a little more receptive? Or is that even part of the issue, really?
I think they are. Years ago when street culture began, we've always had social work practicum students right from day one. Mm. And then that morphed a bit, and we started to get international development students, then Christian ethics from high school or work experience in the public system. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, we were approached by SIAST, by the LRP or the nursing program, mm-hmm. and they started placing nurses with us as a community development experience. Well, that's exploded to where we have dozens and dozens of nursing students from both the RN program and the LPN that come through our doors and spend weeks or months with us as part of their experience in school. And we capitalize on that. We're able to get those nurses directly to the outreach services so they can use their critical learning skills to assess medical conditions or psychological ones. And they're a critical part of who we are because they have an education and experience that we lack. So I think that's going to translate. My message to the students is when you're a nurse in an emergency room and this pierced kid comes in that's all tattooed up, remember us. And I think they will. I think the experience for them is so positive mm-hmm. that they're going to carry this. And it's those champions that will start to turn that huge ship of bureaucracy around and start to see us as one community instead of isolating us by race, gender, ethnicity, or sexual orientation, mm-hmm. et cetera.
One sort of minor question here. I can imagine some kids coming to you, and in terms of like documentation, they've got nothing or next to nothing. Like, it wouldn't be unusual to take somebody to the hospital and say, oh, where's your health card? What health card? But how do they cope with that?
A common problem. Because we're known in the community, we're able to move a few mountains that way. And we immediately start with our action plan the next day to get these things in order. But the hospital is very, very receptive to the issues that we've brought in. No issue whatsoever. And I think it can't be understated. The community is changing. Mm-hmm. I think we're starting to realize that the Global Village is also a very local village, and we are affected by everyone in our community. And as we see it, street culture, these are our future caregivers. These mm-hmm. are our future doctors, teachers, bookkeepers, waitresses, house moms. And God forbid, when I'm a senior, they'll be right there along helping me. So we certainly see them as our future leaders and contributors to our community. And so they should be afforded the opportunities that they weren't as young people.
Cool.
Okay, we're just about at the end of our first half hour here, Gord.
Good stuff.
And so we're going to take a break. And one of the things that, Chad, you were telling me about was you've basically got a sound...
Studio. Yes.
And some of your group are producing things.
I will give a shout out to Mike Durand. He is the brains and the heart in that lab. So yeah, this is a lot of his work, and then the youth that we work with mm-hmm. also are very creative in the arts of rapping and hip hop. And so yeah, this is I think we're gonna play a piece right now that was produced.
But right after the break.
Right after the break, yeah. That was produced in our lab, so.
Okay, so we'll get into the break here and stay tuned, and you're going to hear something that was locally produced by this studio experimental project.
Street Culture Studios.
Okay, here we go.
Caution to action to make an option. Living dangerous was so common, never thought it'd be so haunting. Drama, problems, wanting streets to stop calling. Stepping into worlds, now I find myself stopping from falling. I ain't perfect, but I stay in top. I draw myself close to the block, I might get some crazy thoughts. Walk to walk, talk to talk, negativity is caught. Keys are tied up in a knot, I got these doors locked. I'll be that caring person, never let my heart go cold. I feel it in my soul, tell me it's a warrior's role. Become a leader, take control, never care for no gold. I got my family in my arms and I'll never let go. My shadow's casting everywhere I stand, you understand. Every obstacle that came away never lets me down. I work for everything, that's who I am, I could have ran. Made a lot of changes, now I stand like a true man.
A warrior, a warrior.
You gotta stand up for something.
I told you I'm a warrior, a warrior.
Fighting for the right thing.
I told you I'm a warrior.
Keep the fire burning where the world gets colder.
I told you I'm a warrior.
I never stop fighting till the war is over.
Give me a second to catch my breath. I'm breathless, I'm speechless. I'm working to be my best, but this standard's a never even. I'm telling them it's the weak end of the stick. Never gonna break. Ironic how we never got a break. I mash my face. From the block I walk away. Won't add up, so don't catch up. The street life matching my pace. Don't wanna claim a rank, so I'm a target. Don't wanna play no games to be a part of. Switching my lifestyle, cause I don't wanna see no charges. I wanna live good and keep a girl that's looking gorgeous. I'm just saying though, seen too many storms to get excited over rainbows. First you're up, then you're down, but that's just how the game goes. Never getting around to fix it, so it stays broke. Penny for your thoughts, nickel for your lesson. Dollar in a dream, I can't afford the message. I hope you see what I'm about to tell then.
I'm a warrior, a warrior.
You gotta stand up for something.
I told you I'm a warrior, a warrior.
Fighting for the right thing.
I told you I'm a warrior.
Keep the fire burning where the world gets colder.
I told you I'm a warrior.
I never stop fighting till the war is over.
I'm a warrior. Never quit the battle, even if my life got too much to handle. Grew up a kid with no support, so I found it in the pavement. Didn't think I could ever take this, being part of a world full of snakes and racists. I used to rumble, and my whole world would crumble. It's hard to remain so humble, stay out of trouble, because the pain ain't settled. I wanna leave this earth, I think I need a space shuttle. Back when the world was ancient, before we were placed on reservations, when culture was the basis of a strong foundation, living off the land, real education. So get a notebook, write down this lesson, never stop learning, no asking questions. Don't ever let them tell you you can't do nothing, cause you can turn nothing into something. Fighting for my people until we equal. Warriors, stand up, let's fight this evil. I'm a warrior, a warrior. You gotta stand up for something. I told you I'm a warrior, a warrior. Fighting for the right thing. I told you I'm a warrior. Gotta keep the fire burning where the world gets colder. I told you I'm a warrior. Never stop fighting till the war is over. I'm a warrior, a warrior. You gotta stand up for something. I told you I'm a warrior, a warrior. Fighting for the right thing. I told you I'm a warrior. Gotta keep the fire burning where the world gets colder. I told you I'm a warrior. I never stop fighting till the war is over.
Ages. Warriors from all nations were the protectors of their tribes, families, and loved ones. Today, a lot of our Aboriginal warriors are incarcerated in correctional facilities and are unable to protect and provide for their loved ones. Our people need the young warriors to come back to the ways of a true warrior, to fulfill your destiny and to protect us from poverty, broken homes, and help raise our children not to become victims of our own communities. Warriors, rise up and answer this call. Stay out of the justice system and be that warrior our people need in this day and age. And help guide our young people to a brighter future.
That's amazing stuff, Chad.
Thank you.
And what's the name of the group?
It's actually Street Culture Studios. Mike Duran produced that video and the music. There's a couple of people on there. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention their names, but Kyle, one of them, is Kyle Wood. He is actually, he was rapping on there, and he's now actually doing the soup program, mm-hmm. helping mentor kids because his past gang involved life and stuff. So it's really cool to see, and it's just got a great message, and mm-hmm. yeah, it gives me shivers every time I listen to it.
Yeah. No doubt.
So there might be people who are just tuning into the program because it's just past the break now. So I want to welcome everybody who is listening. Whether you're listening over the internet or here on community radio at 91.3 FM. And our special guests today are Kim Sutherland and Chad Miller from Street Culture Kids. So welcome back to the second half of the program. And, we were thinking it might be worthwhile just to give you a bit of chance, Kim and Chad, to talk about the range of program, because it's quite a significant scope in terms of not just the soup program, the scope, but other programs that you're involved with. So do you want to take a little bit of time and do that now?
Sure, I would very much like to. I think it would be important for people to know we've grown a little bit since you saw us out there on the face painting lines. And we just hit we've hired our 93rd staff, so we have a staff complement over 90 strong, and a budget, of course, reflecting in the millions. But we're a very, very small town at heart. And much of our funding is item-related. So even though we can show an impressive budget, it still is restrictive in some ways because we work with two very distinctly different levels of young people. The first are those through government services, the extraordinary work done by justice workers and social workers within the ministries as direct partners to refer their young people to our services is one of our best and most well-funded pieces of our agency. But then there's the other side, and these are the kids that are truly under the radar. They sleep under the radar. They live under the radar. And they don't and can't acquire formally any government services until, again, there's some conduit to get them there. Regardless of that, our programming is universal. And we have four major programs that include and involve all the young people that we serve. The age group that we work with predominantly is 15 to 19, but by constitution, we work with kids 15 to 29 with street culture. And then with a sister organization, we've developed a relationship with, and that's the Boys and Girls Clubs of Regina. We work with kids 5 to 14, specifically in the inner city of North Central, with that program exclusively. But the four programs that serve us really well, and these aren't programs, in addition to our programs, is our housing continuum, from emergency housing to second stage and then stabilization. But the day-to-day activities that engage the young people, one of our most popular and supported programs is called RCY, or Regina Connected Youth. Our partner on this is the Ministry of Justice, Ministry of Corrections and Public Safety. Policing, and they've, in a sense, they've brought us in as mentors, where they at one point would hire, for example, 10 mentors for 10 different youth, and then these mentors would connect with the kids at night and act in like a supportive adult role model. They came to us a few years ago and said, if we gave you the budget for the 10, could you supply services? And we were pleased to respond to that request. And now we have a team of outreach workers that take these kids, even in Dojack, and visit them there, get ready for their release, and then engage them in a very meaningful way in the community. And this is not just social and recreational activities. This also involves things like delivering good food boxes for the folks over at REACH, or Regina Early Action on Child Hunger, and the convenience meals for that same group. It could be doing the gardening boxes in North Central, helping shut-ins with yard work. Anything that comes to us in the way of a request for community, we assess the risk, and then our teams are out there. And we engage up to 17 young people through that program, RCY. And this year, we were thrilled because they funded us for what we're calling RCY2. And these, because of the success with the very high-risk young people that were referred to us, we've accelerated it into extreme risk.
Just when you say risk, what are we talking about here?
The easiest way to define that would be through criminal behavior.
Okay. So high sort of risk to reoffend type of thing?
Risk to reoffend, but also the type of behavior and involvement that young people have. Remembering that for young people, being involved in a gang is not the problem. Mm-hmm. It's the solution. Ah. And I think that that's understated again in our community. When we have our basic needs met, the four that follow are belonging, fun, freedom, and power. And gangs certainly meet all four of those needs, and they are basic human needs. They're not youth needs or adult needs. They're human needs. And belonging is the one that is met most quickly by a gang affiliation. And so we've moved into the world of working directly with what would be extreme needs around harmful involvement. It takes a special skill set, and we've got an incredible group of staff, including Andy and Alyssa, who take care of overseeing the staff complement on that project. That's evening and weekend work, as well as I said, exiting or releasing, being released from Dojack Youth Center. Mm-hmm. Additionally, we have a mentoring program. All of our programs are reaction-based. We don't, in a sense, advertise ourselves and come and tell you what service we'll provide. We look to what niches are not being explored, and then we see if we have the capacity, the desire, and the skills to meet the need. And without hesitation, we jumped on because mentoring is something we've done right from the beginning. The very natural thing of role modeling for kids, what usual or average parents would. In fact, very often when we're in conflict and we're discussing a particular young person who's having some challenge, someone in our group will stop us and ask the very simple question, what would a parent do? And, you know, when that question's asked and you put that filter on, it changes from a theoretical response based in academia to a very human response based in what we all know best, and that is solid upbringings with families. And so it gives us a chance to simply utilize what we learned as young people that got us to where we're at. And those that are experiential that didn't have those opportunities, they also have a lot to share because they came through it the hard way, but they did find their way through it. So our mentoring program is, again, extraordinary, working with the Ministry of Social Services. They supply the kids, and we supply the engagement. Again, this is to very, very long-term goals. We could measure them quickly and frequently, but it wouldn't really give the full picture of what we're attempting. We are trying to break the cycles of dysfunction, family violence, poverty, gang affiliation, poor education, poor health, and the list goes on and on and on. We will only know if we were competent in doing so when our kids grow up.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a lot of stuff you're doing. And, you know, as I listen to you talk, it's really pretty interesting in terms of this approach you're taking. And this is really reflecting on the need to think about the very long term. And I know quite often when various levels of government kind of think about what they might do around one issue or another, particularly around things like poverty or homelessness, it tends to be, or at least has tended to be, short-term, at least in terms of funding, and even in terms of an agenda, if I can put it that way, or a plan, it tends to be short-term. But you're really looking at something that is long-term in terms of connection with young people, and I think that's one of the probably significant successes and reasons for your success. But it must be a challenge to keep that kind of perspective in front of people.
Indeed it is. That's an interesting discussion you'd open up, and we have this at both the board and staffing levels.
Yeah.
Because very many times there's a bunch of round pegs and square holes out there, and we're mismatching with each other in community and in government. I can say that the current government, the SAS party, is doing something very different than what we experienced 18 years ago. We were referred our first what would be deemed the high-risk youth in 1997, and it was in 2008 that we received our first source of income for working with street-involved young people. So it took 11 years and a change of government for us to see to be valued and recognized for what we were doing without compensation for a long time. I'm a patient person. I knew that if we just kept going, some cavalry would appear over that horizon. And indeed, they did. It's still a bit of a challenge. The length of time a government is in power is not at all connected to the length of time it's going to take to see the results of the young people we serve. But we're working really hard to find our common ground. And I again would state that we find it within trusting relationships with the frontline and managerial staff within the provincial ministries. It's taken a long time as the government has turned their ship around. They're working with community in a way they never have before. And they don't come at it top-down, as one would expect. It's now become a true partnership where they have the resources and expertise, and we have the arms and legs to carry their goal out. So it's become an extraordinary relationship, one that I would not have predicted 15 years ago.
Good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, in terms of your experience, Chad, you started as somebody that had an experience that was different in terms of how you approached street culture. You weren't somebody that was working initially with street culture. You had a discussion with them and then went through, I'm sure, many phases of experience with street culture, and now you're providing a significant leadership role.
Yes, and to be fair, I wasn't working at all. I've gone from a street, I guess, kid, for lack of a better word, into a leader, yes. And I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that. I've, if it wasn't for street culture, and actually the team that I've grown up with in street culture that have helped me and given me chances, if it wasn't for those people, I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't have felt comfortable to keep coming back after, struggles. And it's them, that street culture staff, that has helped me overcome lots of,
Chad's making a really important point, because when I first heard the news on Rob Ford, and it sickens me to even speak of it, but it sickens me more to think that people have their heads in a cloud thinking that he's going to attempt recovery once and suddenly he's going to magically, unlike millions of people, somehow do something that no one has done. He is an addict. Relapse is part of recovery. Relapse is not an instantaneous moment that is forever gone. If I had one moment to speak to the voting population of Toronto, is that there's a tsunami coming, and it's going to come hard and fast. And when you wake up and realize what you've voted into power, it will be a very dark, dark day for all of Canada, because that's a blight on our entire reputation internationally, not just the community of Toronto. But to the current point, Chad's relapse, as he speaks in his recovery back in, it was that willingness to recognize a human was struggling, and he was prepared to be honest, step forward with what the issues were, and ask for help. And that's the extraordinary part of our team. We have no problem with retention of staff. Our staff only grows, it doesn't shrink. And those that are attracted to this type of work through our process, they have this open heart, this million and one, or make that two or three or four chances, that we just don't give up. The alternative is unacceptable. We know that if we give up, the street is the future for that young man or woman, and we're not prepared to see that as an option.
So, you know, before the break, we were talking just a little bit about the connection that you help young people make with our healthcare system. And, you know, the nurses who are there with you at the when you're handing out soup, and the conversations you get into there, even some of the conversations you might then follow up with and help young people get connected at a hospital or a doctor's office. The other thing I was wondering about is what you're doing relative to connecting young people you're involved with the education system. Another area of, you know, are many of the young people that you're connecting with currently in school or looking at going back to school? How does that all work?
I'll jump in there, because there was a day that I walked into the shelter about a year ago, and it was during the school year, and it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and I looked at the roster, and we had 12 of the 15 beds filled, and the place was empty. And I turned to the staff, and I said, "Where are the kids?" And they looked at me oddly and said, "Well, they're in school, of course." And yet we thought about it at that moment and realized, by policy, the shelter is emergency stay. It's a 30-day maximum stay with some, again, ministerial permission for something different. But within that time, that shelter staff, extraordinary people, created an action plan for every kid. And their first step was to get themselves enrolled in school. So if you look at our basic values as an organization, our top 8 values, number one is education. But these kids also fall through the slats. We have some extraordinary alternative schools in the community being run by both the separate and public systems, and we embrace those programs. But we're also searching now for a hybrid. We've found a number of young people who are falling through the slats, as it were. And just in June of this past year, we celebrated 12 young people's graduation from high school that without the support of the mentors in the safe houses, these young women and men would never have made it through high school. So we recognize that as great as we're doing, as alternatives we're creating educational programs, let's not sit back on our laurels. Let's look for those that are still not engaged and engage them, because at the end of the day, it's a very small investment once they become taxpaying citizens. And I implore people to consider that. We make a small investment in these kids while they're living on the street. We get them into the workforce. They are going to repay that investment 100-fold in their lifetime of being a laborer or an employed citizen.
Mm. Kim, looking ahead a little bit here to September 2015, the roster of returnees, who do you expect to have there?
You know, the odd thing about street culture is we're still involved with them. We have constant contact. It's not going to be difficult to find these young people because they grew up with us. We are not a 10 or 12-week anger management or self-esteem support program. We are a multi-year, intimately involved, directly connected to young people project. So, in fact, I'm best man for one of our young people who at 15 I would never have predicted. He's now the father of 5, living with his wife who's in a nurse, and he's chosen to work with us part-time and be a stay-at-home dad. And they recently got married, and I was their best man. I'm going to join them in Punta Cana for their wedding in November. And that illustrates the types of relationships that come out of this. We can be, as a community organization, we are not encumbered by some of the processes that come through more academic systems. We share at very heart levels with these young people. We work on 24/7. We're on call for the kids we serve. So to find the young people to come back for street culture, mm-hmm. come home, is going to be a very simple phoning tree, and we know they'll be busting down our door. What I'm really fascinated by is what they're going to be doing mm-hmm. for our stage show, because it's going to be a stage show second to none.
Wow. Looking forward to it, for sure. For sure. Yeah, just the whole thought of this sort of generation coming through. And do you foresee, is this kind of a goal for you, that you're going to work yourself out of a job?
I wish I could, you know, yeah, along with the police and the medical profession. I think if we look back throughout history, there's always been those that would be termed marginalized or disenfranchised, at risk, and now street involved. I would like to think that we make some serious inroads. One of the challenges that I see as a former businessman is, in the business community, when a good idea surfaces, everyone steals the idea and duplicates it because it makes money. In the nonprofit sector, the charity sector, I don't quite understand, even after 18 years at the front line, why we keep going back and looking for underlying issues, why there are even granting processes that would allow us to bring in academic students to research any of these issues to find the underlying issues. I would welcome the next time there's a call for proposals that anyone could give me a call, and I'll give them a multitude of binders that will very clearly explain the underlying issues, and we can get busy with working instead of planning. We see a lot of processes where people plan to meet, and then they meet to plan, and then they plan to meet again. And we don't actually do anything. So we've removed ourselves from those processes, we hit the ground running, and we do something. It's better than nothing, and it will give us a result different than we have now, which is what we're searching for.
Well, Kim and Chad, it's been great having you here. We're going to finish up with another track from the CD you brought me in. Can you tell me a little bit about it, Chad?
Yes, I can. The female in this song, I was going to say video, because there is a video up on YouTube of it. If you go on YouTube and look up Street Culture Studios, you can find these videos. She has her own addiction struggles and has overcome them, and now she's making music, and it's just a beautiful song.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks, Kim. I'm going to finish off by telling you that Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."
306 Music, Street Culture Studio, Ariane Ross, Notice, yeah. Judging me because my body is tatted. Stereotype people only normal on the average. Take a picture while last ain't a static. Kids wanna look like I'm from a different planet. Create up all the mother drug addicts. An image of a gangster, look for bad habits. Stepping back like I'm gonna do some damage. Stepping back like I'm gonna do some damage. Realize this in reality, poetically, there's no reason to be. I'm reason like I'm committing felonies and leaving me for how I look with the gangster mentality. I can hit you right now when you be mad at me. I pay my rent, I made it out of poverty. I left from Central, I started my own family. I left a life I considered dramatically.
sing. Inside we all sing. We all got hearts, we all feel pain. I could be the